the only thing that we all know, we all appreciate in one another is kindness. So this has to come before all things, and you must operate relentlessly this way with everything you have.
It's been 5 years since Sandy Hook happened, and that's what we call it, Sandy Hook. That was where 20 children, first graders, were murdered in their classroom by a maniac who got guns from his maniac paranoid parents. I understand I'm casting a lot of aspersions here. After killing his mother, he decided to go down to the local elementary school. Think about the level of evil that is involved in that. My feeling towards firearms and the way Americans approach them and collect them, it's always been the same. But Sandy Hook was the thing that changed everything for me.
This day when a searing tragedy struck in a place parents felt their children were safe. The worst grade school shooting in U.S. history, at least 27 dead, 20 children, 7 adults, including the principal. And the gunman killed himself. And all over this town, in churches like the United Methodist Church behind us, well, the lights are on and they are still open for prayer tonight.
And they will be all night. People have been gathering here for prayer to lean on each other and lean on a belief in something bigger than themselves to help get through what is just impossible to believe here or anywhere else. The sentiment here echoed in what you're seeing now down by the Washington Monument in D.C. Many members of the Connecticut delegation was there. But this story is really about their home here, Newtown, Connecticut, just 27,000 people. This is a place where people know each other. Families know each other. And what happened today is known by all. And it's not just about how many were lost, it's about the age. What is hitting everyone so hard is the reality of these being children that were targeted by a madman. We now know his name. We know he's 20 years old, Adam Lanza. We know that before he came to this school, he shot his own mother, Nancy, in the face, killing her at her home. The looming question is why this man then decided to come to this school. He shows up at a place where they're making gingerbread houses in preparation for the holidays and Christmas presents. Just kids. A man in black enters with a vest and multiple weapons and begins a massacre. It was a clear, crisp, and trouble-free start to the morning at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Kids like Ella Sievers and her mother Amy,
just do the elf dance, but you don't...
eager for the weekend and the holidays to arrive.
It's Christmas time, right? Where are we, Mom, in terms of Christmas planning?
Some shopping, cookie making. We decorated our Christmas tree.
Ella, Christmas list made?
Mm-hmm.
Sent to Santa?
Yes.
Ella's class was preparing to make gingerbread houses.
When you first got there?
When I first got there, it was like a regular day.
But at 9:41 a.m., the children's day and their innocence is shattered.
6-7 Sandy Hook School. Call is indicating she thinks there's someone shooting in the building.
We heard a loud bang. We thought that something fell. Then we heard another. And then we thought that that was a gunshot.
What do you remember?
We got to school. We did everything we needed to, and then we heard all this racket. Then we heard them say, go in your cubbies. We thought we had to go because something bad was happening.
What did the teacher do then?
She read us some books and we talked about things and they played little games in there.
And while that was going on, your teacher was reading you books and keeping you calm?
Yeah.
She just kept her calm and told you a story?
She read us The Nutcracker and another book. That was about Christmas.
Right. How did you find out, Amy?
We got a phone call from the school saying the schools were in lockdown.
Lockdown? I mean, what sense does that make to you as a word for your kids' kindergarten through four school?
Not very good.
Police quickly converge on the school, secure the perimeter, and start a painstaking search for the shooter.
A police came in. It's like, is he in here? Then he ran out.
That included checking every door, every crack, every crevice, every portion of that school. Our main objective was to evacuate as quickly and efficiently as possible any and all students and faculty, and the school.
It takes an agonizing hour before it becomes clear just what's taking place inside the school. Next come ominous signs. Ambulances are called. Stretchers set up. By 10:30 a.m., police and teachers escort groups of traumatized students out of the school. Kids who give the first indications of the terrible scene inside.
Kids were crying, not really like screaming, but they felt they're all huddling together and they felt so sick.
We all put our hands on other people's shoulders and then our teacher held the first person's hand and she let us out.
Did you keep your eyes closed?
Yes.
The whole time?
Mm-hmm.
And when you opened them, where were you?
We were walking down to the fire station.
The children are taken to the fire department where frantic parents swarm, desperate to find out if their kids are safe.
It was terrifying. I'm still terrified. I think I'm still in shock about it all. I still don't know everything that happened. You're rushing over here and you can't get to where you need to go and you have to park down here and walk.
When a son or daughter is found, the relief is immense.
I was so happy. I just hug.
What goes through your mind when you see her?
Oh my God, this is the best day of my life, the worst day of my life. Just gratefulness. Yeah, gratefulness. I mean, the tears come to your eyes immediately when you know that your child's okay.
But too many families aren't as lucky. Minutes drag by, no answers on what's going on inside the school. As news trickles out, the worst becomes obvious. Not all of the reunions between parent and child will be happy ones.
Okay, these units in the school, I got bodies here.
By 11 a.m., police give the first indications that there are multiple fatalities inside. By 11:50 a.m., they announce most of the fatalities are children. It is almost unimaginable. 27 dead, 20 children. News of the second worst shooting in U.S. history smothers the country.
I know there's not a parent in America who doesn't feel the same overwhelming grief that I do. The majority of those who died today were children. Beautiful little kids between the ages of 5 and 10 years old. They had their entire lives ahead of them. Birthdays, graduations, weddings, kids of their own.
This isn't Iraq, Afghanistan, Beirut, Colombia, Vietnam. This is an elementary school in America. And Sandy Hook, I'll say it to the day I die, Sandy Hook was the thing that changed everything for me. And if that wasn't enough, then I had to learn the story about Dylan Hockley, which is another name that will haunt me forever. Because after learning the story about Dylan Hockley and his teacher, it made me wonder, when it comes to the folks that say that we can't do anything about this and that after these tragedies happen, it's too soon to talk about it and that guns are right. It made me think about how many of these people I'm surrounded by. I call the actions that were carried out by Adam Lanza and dozens of other shootings just like him evil. But evil does not exist on its own. It's enabled by people that want to keep the same policies that have always kept us in eternal bondage.
I want to introduce you to Dylan Christopher Jack Hockley, who in this picture is age 6. According to just about everybody who knew him, it was impossible not to fall in love with Dylan Hockley if you met him. Dylan was struggling with autism as a student at Sandy Hook Elementary School, but he was a special, special boy who is going to turn in to a special, special young man. He idolized a woman named Anne Marie Murphy. Anne Marie Murphy was his special education teacher and his personal aide. And over the course of the beginning of his first grade year, they formed a bond, a deep, deep bond that is often hard to form for kids with autism like Dylan. It meant something to him to have that relationship. And he loved going to school in large part because he knew he had someone there who loved him back. When Adam Lanza walked into that classroom and aimed his military-style assault weapon with clips attached to it holding 30 bullets, Anne Marie Murphy probably had a chance to run or to hide or to panic. And instead, Anne Marie Murphy made the most courageous decision that any of us could imagine. Instead of running, instead of hiding, instead of panicking, Anne Marie Murphy found Dylan Hockley and embraced him. You know why we know that? Because when the police entered the classroom, that's how they found Dylan Hockley, dead, wrapped in the embrace of Anne Marie Murphy. It doesn't take courage to stand here on the floor of the United States Senate for 2 hours or 6 hours or 14 hours. It doesn't take courage to stand up to the gun lobby when 90% of your constituents want change to happen. It takes courage to look into the eye of a shooter and instead of running, wrapping your arms around a six-year-old boy and accepting death as a trade for just a tiny little itty-beast piece of increased peace of mind for a little boy under your charge. And so this has been a day of questions. And so I ask you all this question. If Anne Marie Murphy could do that, then ask yourself, what can you do to make sure that Orlando or Sandy Hook never, ever happens again? With deep gratitude to all of those who have endured this very, very late night, I yield the floor.
Today's show could have been taped a week ago, or a month ago, 2 months ago, or a year ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, because it's the same thing every week. I could put this out next week after taping it, or I could put it out in a month, or I could put it out in a year. I could, unfortunately, probably put it out in 5 years, and it would still be as relevant as it is right now. I'm not putting a date on today's show. I'm not even putting a number inside today's show, so as to leave the mystery of when this was actually taped. Now, obviously, it's taped post Sandy Hook, but how many other shootings have happened since then? Dylan Hockley's parents have both become advocates, making sure that this kind of tragedy doesn't happen again. But obviously, since their little boy was taken from them, this has happened several times. And recently, Nicole Hockley wrote to President Trump and said, please, this from The Guardian, please listen to a Sandy Hook mom on gun reform. Quoting here, after every mass shooting, I hear arguments that have become all too familiar to me since Sandy Hook. Some argue for gun control, some argue for gun freedom. Obviously, those are just frames, political frames. As quickly as the debates about guns starts, it ends. These horrific attacks just fade from the news headlines quickly. Over and over again, we're told, now is not the time to talk about gun violence. The time to talk about gun violence is long past. For the people in Vegas, Texas, Orlando, Newtown, Virginia, and the thousands of others who die from gun violence, the time to act is now. In the article, she asks for something, and obviously this is going to take courage on the part of Congress, so it's not likely to happen. But she asks for something called ERPOs to be implemented. These are extreme risk protection orders, quoting here, and that's in their one way to protect families and communities from gun violence. With ERPOs in place, family members or local law enforcement can support someone who is adjudicated as at risk to themselves and others, as in the case of domestic violence, suicide, or homicide, and temporarily remove access to firearms and block attempted purchases until they are no longer a risk. ERPOs have been proven to save lives and to protect due process and Second Amendment rights. ERPOs are established and have been successfully managed by several states, including California, Oregon, Washington, and Connecticut. ERPOs are legislation both Republicans and Democrats can and should support. The federal government should be doing everything that it can to encourage states to enact such legislation that has been proven to save lives using the carrot or stick of federal grant money. Historically, when the president and Congress have wanted to mandate national safety rules like a highway speed limit or drinking age, it has used the power of the purse, making funding contingent on states taking certain actions. So, if the government is serious about combating gun violence, it should put its influence where its money is. Using federal public safety grants like highway or law enforcement funding as a carrot to incentivize states to pass ERPOs, in the end, everyone wins. The federal government gets states to do what it wants, and states get the money they need, and people's lives will be saved by a common sense law. There is proof that this approach has worked, not only to ensure state compliance, but to save lives. In 1974, when the president and Congress set the national speed limit at 55 miles an hour, road fatalities declined 16.4% in just 1 year. In 1984, Congress proposed cutting 10% of highway federal funds to states that did not comply with the new national drinking age of 21. President Reagan said, in a case like this where the problem is so clear-cut, the benefits are so clear-cut, I have no misgivings about a judicious use of federal inducements to encourage the states to get moving and raise the drinking age and save precious lives. According to the NIH, drunk driving accidents have dropped by 50% since the law was passed. Please, Mr. President, refuse to accept these national tragedies as the norm in America. Refuse to stop progress and prevention by remaining silent. Refuse to be a part of the endless debate that goes nowhere and just leaves more death and grieving families every day. Help stop gun violence before it starts, and let this be a part of your legacy protecting American lives. But unfortunately, two of the five deadliest U.S. shootings in modern history have happened in the last month. After the most recent shooting, the president decided to say that this is not a guns situation. This is a mental health situation. And this is what they say every time. It's a mental health thing. It's about mental health, which is amazing, because one of the very first things that was passed by this Congress and signed by this president was a bill allowing the mentally ill to get guns. Please allow me to explain. So for you to get Social Security, if you are not of Social Security age, because it's also disability insurance and survivor insurance. So for you to get it because you're mentally ill, try not to use the word crazy, because you're mentally ill, what you have to do is you have to demonstrate, you know, you can't hold a job, you can't bring in an income, and then you can collect that money. And if the Social Security Administration deems that you are so mentally ill that you should not have access to firearms, that used to be a thing. But Congress said no. Even if they say that you're that mentally ill, that you should not have access to firearms, the Second Amendment is your right, and you should get access to firearms. Talking about evil earlier, I think that's evil. It's the very first act that they did. Well, the very first act was, of course, getting rid of the Office of Ethics, because they knew how grossly unethical they were going to be. And then, of course, they put in a law to make sure that mentally ill people can get their hands on guns. I feel like I'm in the majority when it comes to people that have been changed by the gun violence in this country, for the worse, obviously. And I can't be the only one that was just shaken by what happened in Sandy Hook. But of course, there is the other side. Not all of us were as shaken as I am.
And I have something I want to say to the victims of Newtown or any other shooting. Deal with it and don't force me to lose my liberty, which is a greater tragedy than your loss. I would stand in front of them and tell them,
they're being you.
Go to hell.
When that segment came out, it ran a lot longer. It ran about 2 minutes of that guy just telling these Sandy Hook families to just suck it, to go to hell. Screw them, screw their kids, screw their school, screw their town, screw everything. Because guns are the most important thing. And where does that kind of thinking come from? That kind of language, that kind of cold-bloodedness, where does it come from? Well, it comes from conservative media. Not all conservative media, but quite a few conservative outlets. and probably the worst outlet of all of it. Anytime I get behind somebody with an InfoWars sticker on the back of their car, I just want to hammer my gas pedal and drive my car right through their pickup truck. I know that wouldn't happen. Pickup truck is big and strong, but I can't get over it because it was InfoWars. And it was Alex Jones that pushed the idea that Sandy Hook never even happened. And then you ended up with the Sandy Hook truthers. And they said, no, 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 it's all fake. The families to this day still get harassed by people who say that they never had children. They didn't bury anybody. There's nothing but actors in that town. And there was one guy who decided to put out a bounty saying, hey, I don't think Sandy Hook really happened. And I've got the money. If you've got the proof.
Now, some of you may be aware of the fact that I have offered a $25,000 cash reward for irrefutable proof that Sandy Hook was real. I believe it was staged. I believe that no one was shot, no one was injured, no one was killed. It was all done by crisis actors, a bunch of liberals who got together at a closed-down old school, which was decommissioned several years prior to the day of the event. It was decommissioned for asbestos and mold, and it had all kinds of issues. And the building was just being used for storage. But Sandy Hook was fabricated by somebody who decided, oh, we're going to do a school shooting, and all of the fake actors who play out the parts of all of these victims are going to become filthy rich from fools who are sending money to them, millions and millions of dollars. Oh, I'm so crying about all the children that were killed and ruthlessly gunned down by an evil black rifle. All right, here's the deal. I put up a reward, a real reward, for $25,000 for irrefutable proof that Sandy Hook was real.
$25,000. $25,000. The families post-Sandy Hook have been harassed incessantly. They've had to leave their homes. They've had to quit their jobs. They've had to move to all different areas of the country. And these Alex Jones people will still find them and still harass them. We have at least one of these families living in my local area here in the Portland, Vancouver area. So there's an update to the Sandy Hook story. This from The Guardian. Families have decided to take the gun manufacturers to court. Now, Congress passed a law a number of years back that these gun manufacturers and gun sellers cannot be held responsible for the destruction done with these weapons of war. And there is a law called the Dickey Amendment that was passed back in the 90s. And by the way, the guy who wrote the Dickey Amendment, the senator who wrote that amendment, is now retired. His name is Jay Dickey. And he has since came out and said that he wished that he would have never sponsored it or written it. And it's time for us to overturn it. But it's too late. It's law, and conservatives, by and large, love it. But the Dickey Amendment says that the government cannot spend any money tracking gun murders. We don't exactly know how many guns are in the country. We have an idea. We don't exactly know how many shootings happen. We have an idea. And it's largely because these advocacy groups decide to run these numbers, decide to keep track of these things. And that's how we know. The official government numbers, there aren't any, because we're not allowed to spend any money on them. They made it illegal. The Dickey Amendment made it illegal for the Health and Human Services or any of those groups to spend any money on prevention, on gun death prevention. So the Sandy Hook families are back in court, and they're suing, and they're focusing on the marketing. This is the angle that they have now. And what they're saying is that Remington may have never known, quoting from the article here, the Sandy Hook shooter, Adam Lanza, but they had been courting him for years. This according to Josh Koskoff, an attorney for the Sandy Hook plaintiffs. The weapon he needed for his mission that day was never in doubt, Koskoff said, explaining the Bushmaster AR-15 style assault rifle the shooter had been marketed as. Quote, one of the slogans was, the uncompromising choice when you demand a rifle as mission adaptable as you. One of the other slogans that they used was, consider your man card reissued. These things are marketed with toxic masculinity in mind. It's the manly thing to do, right? This is how we protect ourselves. This is how we protect our families. I don't know about a lot of people that are being protected right now, but I do know of an awful lot of people that are being murdered, including children. Outside of the courtroom, Ian Hockley, the father of Dylan Hockley, who's we talked about earlier, read a letter from his mother, so both of his parents are activists now, said during a brief press conference after the hearing, they actively market the weapon to unstable individuals. The family whose children killed at 6 and 7 would now be 11 or 12. And they said they have the utmost faith in the legal system to serve the people it's meant to protect. We have not lost an ounce of confidence in the justice of our case, they said. Mark Burden, the father of 7-year-old Daniel Burden, who was murdered at Sandy Hook, said to The Guardian, the justice's line of questioning left him optimistic. It sounded very positive from our side, he said. So we'll watch what happens with that particular story. Obviously, I'm pulling for the Sandy Hook families. I think the gun manufacturers, the gun sellers, I think that they are disgusting human beings, but I suppose that it doesn't matter. I long maintained, especially post Sandy Hook, that we should have pictures. I know the families have gone through enough, and I know how awful that would be. So it's never something that I've seriously advocated for, FOIAs and petitions and things of that nature. It's just something I've said, hey, I think we should see the pictures. And it's not because I don't think it's real. I know it's real. But I think when we hear the numbers, we hear, you know, especially when it comes to numbers, say with the budget, they go, well, the new tax bill is going to have us $1.5 trillion more dollars in debt. And $1.5 trillion means nothing to people. The Iraq war cost $1.5 trillion to $2 trillion, you know, in the first 5 years. You know, and we're just numb to the numbers. You know, there were 600 people shot in Vegas. There were 60 murdered. Numb to the numbers. You know, there were 26 people killed in Sandy Hook. Numb to the numbers. We're just numb to the numbers. And I said, so we need something else that we're not numb to. And you could argue with our violent culture. We watch violent sports. We watch violent movies. You could argue with our violent culture that maybe we are, with when it comes to violence, that we are desensitized enough that maybe seeing the pictures of these children slaughtered wouldn't change anybody's mind. But I think it would. I think when we watch, say, violent sports, that's not people being gunned down. It's violent, but it's not people being gunned down. And when we see it in the movies, when we see it in animation, well, that's not real. You know, we know it's not real. It's a story. It's an illustration. Somebody's illustrating it and telling us a story. But a lot of people aren't sitting around and watching snuff films because we know that people are really, honestly getting hurt. You know, when you think about all these death metal bands with all their violent imagery, Yeah, but none of them are doing any of the murdering themselves. They're drawing pictures and they're getting illustrators and they're creating these incredibly violent, but they're not doing it themselves. They go, whoa, my God, are you kidding me? I got family. I ain't killing nobody. I'm going to prison for murdering somebody. I just write songs about it. This is all very strange to me, although I'm a huge fan of death metal. But I said, we need something because the numbers aren't doing it for people. The numbers of people that own guns, the numbers of murders that are happening, even when it's 5 and 6 year olds, it isn't doing anything for anybody. So let's get the pictures, you know? Because this gigantic gun that was used at Sandy Hook to cut these children in half, I said, I think if people saw that, perhaps then they would begin to realize how bad it is. All these Sandy Hook truthers and Alex Jones and InfoWars and all these nutbags, they don't want to believe it. Because if they believe it, then it's their moral duty to do something about it because they have to put themselves in the shoes of the victims. And I said, what happens to a human, a full-grown human, when they get shot? And I turned to Secrets of Everything.
Interesting.
It's not that usual to use your Sunday lunch as target practice, but anatomically, pigs are a pretty close match to us, which makes them excellent stunt doubles.
3, 2, 1.
Wow, that was loud.
That's a tiny, tiny hole.
Did it go through? That's the question. And yes, it did.
Yes, it did.
For soft targets like flesh, bullets find it very easy just to punch their way through.
it looks like the 900-mile-per-hour bullet has ripped a clean line through the pig. But because we can't see what happened on the inside, we're going to fire at some transparent ballistics gel developed by scientists to represent human tissue.
All we can see left is this one trail, this cavity that the bullet has left as it's passed through.
What the bullet's doing is that it's transferring some of its momentum to the gelatin, and that results in a temporary cavity being formed.
So that means if you're shot, you're left with this hole that we can see, but you've also had internal damage from your flesh kind of expanding and then falling back in on itself.
It seems that no matter how many of these shootings happen, and as you hear there, the damage is caused, so you get a puncture wound, but then it just sort of throws your flesh apart once it goes inside your body. And this is where most of the damage is sustained. And even with things like this and the terrible tragedies that happen, after every single one of these, we hear the same old thing from politicians. And the NRA, I can't even imagine what it would be like to work at the NRA and hear about these things and know that this is your work. This is what you do. This is the tremendous damage that you're causing at your job on a daily basis. But the NRA just digs their heels in further. I think that the absolute definition of terrorism, of evil, probably the worst people in the world, they're not in Al-Qaeda. They work for the NRA.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
So it's interesting they use the word safe in that ad. This is the kind of stuff that the NRA puts out. And for you and me to hear that ad, people who, I'm assuming, I know I'm not, I imagine you are, not an absolute effing paranoid gun nut. So for us, we hear that ad and, oh boy, the music sounds kind of scary and I don't know what the hell her problem is, but that's really all we hear. But I think to a gun nut, they hear, oh my God, the Democrats are coming for my guns, the liberals. The liberals are coming for my guns. Here's the other thing that I will never particularly understand about this issue, and that's the God angle.
Look, I may love Jesus, but if I see you pull a gun on an officer, you want to know whose side I'm on? That's right, I'm going to fill you with 60 rounds of pure lead, and I guarantee you, you're going to have lead poisoning. Look, guys, it's time that we as Americans, we as Christians, we got to start carrying guns, because we got to protect our superheroes, our police officers.
And after one of our recent tragedies, we know the profile of these gunmen. They're male, they're conservative, they're generally Christian, they're white. We know the profile by now. We know at least that much. And then, of course, they got to be a little bit nutty. But with the tragedies seemingly increasing as of late, Alex Jones, the guy who said that Sandy Hook never happened, the guy who led the charge on harassing the families of all of these dead children. In one of his recent shows, he promoted the idea that, you know what, this is probably the time when Democrats are going to get guns and start carrying out more murders. So by God, you better start murdering Democrats.
It's the Republic. It's the real deal. We're doing it. The enemy's engaging us. Everybody needs to be packing, like I told you on Friday and on Sunday. Get ready. Democrats are going to be killing people, a lot of folks. And obviously, Just like you don't see conservatives going out and doing mass shootings. They don't want to blame the Second Amendment. They don't want to go out and kill people. It's almost always drughead Democrats, devil worshippers, you name it. That's their M.O. The Democrats know when they mass kill now, they know to not say they're Democrat operatives. They just want to use that to get the Second Amendment and get a civil war going. But he had Antifa material inside. The sheriff's now coming out saying they're investigating that, which means they found evidence. Just like I told you, that's huge.
That's a lie. They've tried to blame more of these recent shootings on Antifa. These are Antifa Democratic operatives. Antifa! They're not Antifa. None of them are Antifa. You know, not the crazy pants down in Texas, not the guy in Vegas. None of these guys are Antifa. But they can't, once again, they can't accept the truth. None of these guys are conservatives that are committing these murders. None of them. Actually, I would submit to you that all of them are. And all of them are definitely misogynists. Well, we keep being told we can't do anything. Now is not the time. Thoughts and prayers. Now is not the time. We cannot do anything. Let's listen to Dr. Dan on this one.
Let's look at the evidence, starting with Australia. In 1996, a lone gunman killed 35 people in a small town in Australia called Port Arthur. Within 12 days, the Prime Minister, John Howard, banned all semi-automatic and automatic weapons. The government bought back all those weapons from the public and threatened jail time for not handing them over. Within 1 year, 640,000 guns were collected and destroyed. So let's take a look at what's happened since then. Well, in the 18 years before these gun laws were instated, there were 13 mass shootings where 5 or more victims were killed. But in the 20 years since then, not a single mass shooting in the entire country. Not only that, but the risk of gun deaths from homicides, suicides, and accidents immediately halved and have stayed that way ever since. But here's the strange thing. The actual number of guns in Australia today is exactly the same as what it was before 1996, around 3 million. So why was there such a decline in gun-related deaths? Well, the government didn't just take back a whole heap of guns, they also changed the laws around owning a gun. You now had to get a license and register your guns with the government. And lost, stolen, or sold guns all have to be reported to the government. Kind of like how you have to register your car in your name and hand over the registration whenever you sell the car. So now the government can track where all the guns are in the country. And this all makes it much more difficult for guns to slip into the black market. But Australia's not the only country. There have been 10 countries to introduce stricter gun laws that have also published data on gun deaths before and after these laws.
We don't need gun laws. We need thoughts and prayers. After every one of these things, it's too soon. We can't talk about it. It's too soon. You're not thinking about the guns. What you should be doing at this time, you dumb old crat, is offering your thoughts and prayers.
Cecilia and I want to send our sincerest thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts, prayers.
Karen and I send prayers.
The power of prayer.
Thoughts and prayers.
The right thing to do is to pray in moments like this, because, you know what, prayer works.
So if you want to feel like you're doing something, but you don't want to actually do something, well, that's where you get thoughts and prayers. But there are so many gun tragedies now. Man, I can't keep up with them.
Are you feeling sad and overwhelmed by the state of the world? Do you also like drawing attention to yourself with the least amount of effort possible? Then we have the app for you. Introducing TP, the Thoughts and Prayers app.
Awesome. How does it work?
Just download it to your phone. Then once a tragic event occurs somewhere in the world, TP will post thoughts and prayers on your behalf for all of your friends and family to see.
Cool. There's been a mass stabbing in New York, and my thoughts and prayers were automatically posted. I feel like a better person, and I didn't have to do anything.
And you'll never have to again. Forget about cumbersome donations or boring policy changes. With TP, screaming into the void has never been easier or better for your ego.
Now, it seems like everyone is sharing their thoughts and prayers, but I want to show that mine are more important. How can we do that?
You can sign up for TP Premium at $39.99 a month. For the price of a mere 5,200 Poke Coins, TP Premium will shoot your post to the top of social media feeds and post your thoughts and prayers first, before anyone else's.
Wow, I can't wait for the next school shooting.
And neither can we, because TP Premium also gives each of your posts an automatic 1,000 likes.
Finally, a way to help that also helps me.
Hey, there was a bombing in Turkey, but TP didn't post for me. What happened?
Stuff like that happens all the time in those countries. We want to pay attention to important civilized places. Plus, you and your friends don't even know where Turkey is.
No,
they don't.
Thoughts and Prayers app, when you want people to know that you care.
I put about a dozen or so hours into every one of these shows, and I put a little bit more time into this particular one. And of course, I distill it down to an hour, and I may distill this one down to two. Of course, you're only going to get an hour today. But when I do the research and these audio clips and everything for these shows, I end up reliving so much of this stuff. And it's immensely stressful. So I try to find these audio clips, like the one I just played, where you get sort of this moment of levity. Yeah, it's a tragedy, but you have these moments where you have these clips, you know, these things like the app that point out the absurdity of our society, you know, and you have a laugh for a brief moment, and it kind of brings you back. I understand how heavy this stuff is, and it's important for me to not lose you here. I want you to be as informed and as engaged on this as possible. And I want you to see things not just necessarily from my perspective. My perspective doesn't necessarily matter because I don't know anybody that has been murdered yet in a movie theater or in their school or in their church or any other places that we used to consider safe. I don't know anybody qualifier here yet. But the way things are going, it seems like it's not a matter of if, but when it's going to happen. And that kind of thing is going to continue. We're going to continue on that trajectory as long as the GOP continues to defend murderers.
This just happened. We don't even know how many people are going to be killed. Can we just take one day before we turn it into a political issue?
Why are people getting pulled into other issues like gun control right now in the wake of this tragedy and not talking about the economy, which is what matters most to people?
It's naked exploitation of dead children and grieving families. It's play acting. It's feel goodism. And I got to tell you something. The whole thing is grotesque.
Do you think it was appropriate to do this on
Absolutely.
The same day that 13
Absolutely.
People had been gunned down?
You've got people who are trying to turn this tragedy again into some sort of political advantage for them. I just think it's gross.
To see what he can accomplish on his agenda, and then I think that that's sad that he exploits these people.
Before the names were known or the bodies were even cold, he's advancing an agenda. Very sad.
To make a pronouncement at this time when, I hate to say it, the bodies are still warm and the wounded are now in surgery, I think is at least premature.
And they're politicizing this while people are still in surgery and dying.
You know, it didn't take long for the candidates and media to start politicizing that mass shooting yesterday. In fact, the left quickly blamed the incident on guns, using this as an opportunity once again to push their agenda.
For him to come out and push gun control before he knew anything, before any of us knew anything about the guns even used,
right.
I'm sorry, it's irresponsible.
We have no idea how he got those guns. None. No idea. He could have stolen them from a law enforcement officer, for all we know, who had the guns legally, or somebody else who had them legally.
Before you say that this is wrong, with so far there's no indication that he got any of the guns illegally.
We don't know anything about how the shooter obtained the weapon in question. We don't know any of this, and yet the president is using this occasion to urge us to change our gun laws.
Getting in front of the cameras and staking out your position before the facts are known.
Time and time again, the left defaults to blaming their political opponents for these tragedies before the facts are known.
Every time something like this happens, it becomes another bully pulpit for them to push their agenda.
Political left pushing its gun control agenda after the shooting in California.
Already we are seeing anti-gun politicians, anti-gun activists try to turn this tragedy to some sort of political advantage.
These liberal cities are killing fields.
Yes, exactly.
Without a doubt, and they do have the strongest gun laws out there, and it belies everything the president talks about when he makes these kind of pitches, just as these bodies, many of them not even identified yet. So
very offensive, Sean, because we didn't know any of the details. We later found out that he was targeting Christians. But at that moment, he once again goes out and says that we need to change the laws.
Would cracking down on gun laws really prevent killers from getting them? Would more gun laws have stopped what happened in Paris? Absolutely not.
There's no rational explanation for all the carnage, none. And no public policy will stop it.
It's my agenda. The fact that I do not want you to be gunned down while you're attending a country music concert. The fact that I do not want you to be gunned down in a movie theater. The fact that I do not want you to be, you or anyone you know, to be gunned down in an elementary school. The fact that I do not want you to be gunned down while you're walking down the street. The fact that I do not want you gunned down. You see where this is going. The fact that I do not want to see any more of my countrymen slaughtered in these places that we used to consider safe. That's an agenda. That's me advancing a liberal homo agenda. What in the bloody hell is wrong with me? How dare I? And to say that I can't say anything until at least a day has passed since the last tragedy. Well, that's where it becomes impossible. Because there is no longer a day where there's not a tragedy, where there's not a mass shooting. And mass shootings, because they're so frequent in America. It's not two or three. It's more than four people. That's what it takes to make a mass shooting. And that is every day. There are very few days on the calendar where you don't have a mass shooting. So by those rules, I can never, ever talk about this. Me and my stupid liberal agenda.
This Congress has failed the American people. As a Newtown and Aurora, as a Charleston and Orlando, nine Las Vegas, how many more must die? 100? 1,000? 10,000? 1,000,000? What is your blood price? How many more must die? How many mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, sons and daughters, husband and wife? Tell me what? Tell me and tell us. What is the number? How many more dead bodies will it take to wake up this Congress? We hold moments of silence and vigil. We offer our thoughts and prayers. But it's all a show, a placeholder, until people forget and this Congress can move on. We lost Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to a man with a rifle. We lost Senator Robert Kennedy to a man with handguns. I've seen too many gun deaths, and I am here to say right now, this must stop, and it must stop now.
We've already forgotten the last tragedy and just moved on until the next tragedy happens. Of course, when that one happens, we won't remember it but for even a day. And so I'll hear conservatives tell me all the time, we've got gun laws. We got plenty of gun laws. We don't need any more stinking gun laws. Besides, the Second Amendment. Second Amendment is my right to kill people. It's my right to have as many guns as possible. It's my right to murder anybody who so much as even looks at me cockeyed. It's my right. How dare you stinking liberals take that away from me? And we've got some gun laws. That's true. We've got some gun laws. They're very, very weak. And there's an awful lot of loopholes associated with them. Every town is a group working towards sensible gun legislation. And they put out materials, videos, articles, ads, pushing for restrictions, pushing for common sense gun control. They also put out these videos informing people of the kind of laws that exist out there. And I just learned about one called the boyfriend loophole.
Boyfriends who abuse their girlfriends shouldn't be allowed to buy a gun. Every day, an average of 3 women are murdered by boyfriends or husbands. And when a gun is present in situations of domestic abuse, a woman is 5 times more likely to be killed. Thankfully, federal background checks prevent dangerous people from buying firearms. And states that require background checks see 46% fewer women shot by their partners. But there's still a loophole in the system that allows guns to get into the hands of domestic abusers. It's called the boyfriend loophole. Domestic abusers are prohibited from buying or owning a firearm if they've ever been married to the victim, lived together, or had a child. But a dangerous ex-boyfriend or a dating partner? There is nothing stopping them. This is bad news for all couples, but it is particularly troubling for women, since just as many women are killed by dating partners as by spouses. In fact, 1 in 7 blocked gun sales was because of a domestic violence charge. But there's a solution for this. require background checks on all gun sales in every state, and close the boyfriend loophole. 12 states have already closed it. Keeping it open means some abusers will remain above the law, putting the lives of many people, especially women, in jeopardy.
One of the other things we know about your typical shooter is they have domestic violence in their distant or their recent past every time. And their attitudes towards women are absolutely toxic. We learn that over and over and over again about these guys. And we hear it time and time again. But I need it. I need it to protect myself. Do you need it to protect yourself against the woman that you are beating the hell out of? That you're using either physical or sexual violence towards? Is that what you need it for? Because I fail to understand the Second Amendment. It's my right. It's the Second Amendment. I hear it all the time. We have these First Amendment rallies here in Portland, Oregon. And I couldn't help but notice. So the guy, a while back on the MAX train, there was a white guy who got on one of our local light rails and saw two Muslim women and just started going off. Oh, my God. Just started screaming at these women. And a couple of Good Samaritans stepped in, for which they were stabbed. Three of them stepped in and got stabbed. Two of them died. That guy is in court right now. His name is Christian. And the judge is thinking about whether or not he should be let out on bail. This isn't a joke. Should he be let out on bail? And his defense in court is, of course, that, well, he was just using his First Amendment right, and then these guys stepped in and they stopped his First Amendment right. And yeah, he was harassing these brown women, but they were brown, Judge. They were brown. You didn't see them. They were brown. He had to harass them. It's his First Amendment right. No, they do not have the right to not be screamed at by some right-wing nut, but he has the right, the First Amendment right. And then they'll get together in our local parks, these patriot prayer groups, right? These are the slogans that they use. And they'll say, we're having a First Amendment rally. I couldn't help but notice that every time you guys decide to get together and use your First Amendment rallies, you know, your First Amendment, you get together, use your First Amendment rallies for hate speech. You know, you can do other things with the First Amendment, like I'm doing, not using it for hate speech. You can, of course, advocate for policies that will see less and less of your fellow Americans being slaughtered in their places of education or worship. Or you can, of course, get together and repeatedly scream the N-word. I guess it's all the same, right? First Amendment, free speech. I don't know that we should do anything about that, about the First Amendment. But we definitely need to do something about the Second Amendment.
I'm a firm believer in the Second Amendment. In fact, I consider myself to be a Second Amendment originalist. That means I believe every man or woman has the right to bear arms, but only the same arms that our country's forefathers bore in the 18th century. Muskets. I'm talking black powder, muzzle-loaded, smoothbore guns fashioned with a bayonet. And then, only as a last resort, if you have a beef with me, I am going to expect you to try and resolve it using reasonable discourse, using your words and civility. Now, if our tempers are flared past the point of civil discourse, then I expect you to challenge me in an honorable contest of fisticuffs like a grown adult. But to remove oneself to the safe range of a firearm to settle a dispute in America is nothing short of cowardly. Add the ease of automatic firing capability, and I will declare you nothing short of lily-livered. For shame. It's hard for a man to shoot you when you're shaking his hand. Now, a bunch of nincompoops in Texas thought it would be a good idea to bring shotguns into a Chili's to prove some sort of point. But all it did was remind everybody how fucked up it is that you're allowed to bring shotguns into a family restaurant in Texas. Chili's responded by banning guns because, by God, if you're going to shit your pants in a Chili's, it's going to be because of the food. By God.
There are sensible people with us on this issue, even those that believe in some degree of gun ownership. And so those going forward, those are the kinds of relationships that we need to continue to forge. That clip right there was obviously from Nick Offerman. If I'm not mistaken, it was at a White House correspondence dinner. And there are reasonable people out there that are gun owners. I know of them. I learned how to shoot a gun myself from one of those individuals. And that fella, he has his guns. He's just got a couple of them. He's happy with them. He taught me to shoot it because I was planning on being an officer for a while. Yeah, that's who I am. And after meeting him, I go, man, they're not all just nut jobs, huh? And then he and I went to the local gun club where they're all screaming about Obama and how he's going to take our guns. And the guy was in office for 8 years and never took our guns. But that's neither here nor there. But they're out there. So today's episode, which I title Carrying the Cross of Homicide, which is obviously the melding of religion and murder. And all religions have a lot of murder in them. But I believe part of what we need to understand about the current crop of murderers, the current crop of Second Amendment folks, is that they believe that it is their God-given right to own a gun and murder anybody they god dang please. And going forward, in the next show, I'm going to continue to try to explain what we're up against, what we can do, and of course, the importance of forging relationships, not just a band of freaking liberals getting together and going, dang gun, stupid gun. Hey, how about the guys that own the guns? How's about getting together with some of them, the less crazy ones, and seeing what we can't make happen through some reasonable dialogue? Join me again for part two in a couple of weeks. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on the Fiery Camp. And our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for the Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. Yeah, send me your hate mail, gun nuts. I'm with it. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I have woken you up, good morning.